Hey, what's going on? This is Alex Pardo, and this is episode 222 of the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to another masterclass here. And I got my boy, my friend, Mr. Ron Phillips, who I haven't known that long, but Ron and I actually connected about a year and a half ago at an event. And I really just took a liking to him. Really, like just a straight shooter, down to earth, good dude that has been involved in this business for about 17 years or so. And he got started like a lot of people did. You know, he had a corporate job back in the late 90s and, you know, ended up getting laid off, as you're going to hear in a couple of minutes, and got, you know, got exposed to a real estate seminar, you know, did his first deal and hasn't looked back ever since. And, you know, today he's an author, speaker, investor, and him and his company have helped like over 5,500 people, you know, build wealth through real estate, essentially. And Ron has done all types of deals. You know, he's involved in multifamily projects that they own and operate. He's had his own, you know, pretty sizable rental portfolio. And like I said, he's helped a lot of people, just wealth of knowledge. I mean, this guy has so much experience. And in this particular masterclass interview, you know, we talk about a failed partnership, you know, lessons learned from that. We talk about, you know, he recently moved from Utah to Charleston, South Carolina. He's got a team of 12 and, you know, how he runs and operates a virtual business. And we're talking about a highly, highly successful business. And we just get into a lot of great stuff, a lot of things that can really move the needle for you in your personal life and in your business. We talk about, you know, his vision, getting clear, clarity on that. And there's just so much that we covered in here. We also talk about wealth building, something that I've been really kind of, you know, pounding the pavement for you guys to not just focus so much on the transactional income that wholesaling can provide, but making sure that you're building wealth and you're being intentional about that. So having said that, let's jump right into this masterclass. Ron, what's going on, my friend? How you doing today?
I'm great. If I were any better, I'd be twins, man.
I love it, man. I love it. So dude, we were just talking offline. I know you just got back from, so how long were you traveling around Europe with your family?
Around 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Nice. And it was your wife and your kids, right?
Yep. Took the whole family. Well, we left the dog.
Very cool, brother. Very cool. And so I always love to kind of touch on that because I think, you know, a lot of people say that they kind of get involved in this business for the money. What I find, man, is that it's not the money. It's what people feel the money can do for them. And so for me, at the stage that I am in my life, it's about, well, we were just talking about, you know, travel experiences, creating memories. It's not so much about like the flashy toys. And I think that's one of the really cool things that this business can do for people. Obviously, it's done for you, is it gives you the freedom to, you know, unplug and disconnect for 3 weeks and go travel or do whatever it is you want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, if I can't imagine anybody doing it for any other reason than that, really.
Yeah, right.
I think people do get a little too honed in on the money and not, I mean, money really just gives us options.
That's right.
That's what it gives us. I mean, if you, yep, you have the option to go buy a Bentley if you want to, or you can take the Bentley money and go create memories, or you can do both, right? Mm-hmm. If you create enough of it. And it's whatever you want. Just gives you options and choices that you wouldn't have if you didn't have it.
That's right. And there's no right or wrong, right? I always tell people you just have to get clear and have that clarity as to what you want your life to look like. I know obviously you and I, you know, we've been a part of the Life in Air community, and I don't know about you, man, but for me, it's that community has really helped me just get clear on not just what I want, but why I want that, you know, and then creating the vision for your life. I mean, that exercise has been really powerful for me.
That was a game changer for me, man. I mean, completely game changer. I already started going that way because, you know, when I started my new company after I left a partnership and then I started my company all over again, rebuilt. Mm-hmm. And, man, when I did that, I wanted to do it different, and I was trying to do it all on my own. And then when I actually got there and there was this structure to what I was trying to do, uh-huh, and I latched onto Life in Air really, really hard because it fit exactly what I was going for. And yeah, you're right. The, understanding why you're doing what you're doing and making all of your decisions based on a written vision for your life instead of just for your business is magical.
It changes everything. No doubt about it. So let's kind of rewind a little bit. You know, you've been in this business for what, 20-ish years, more or less? How long?
Yeah, somewhere around 17 or 18 years, somewhere around there.
So you've gone through a couple different cycles. You've you know, we were talking offline. You've done all types of deals. You've pretty much done it all. Kind of take us. I know you got your start, you know, very similar to a lot of people. You know, you picked up a Robert Kiyosaki book. I don't think you started with Rich Dad Poor Dad, which is, I think, what most people start with. I think you jumped into like the third or fourth book, I heard you say one time.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize I was. I had the Millionaire Mind. I had read it. And there was another sales guy at the company where I was, and he was done with his book. And I said, dude, let's just trade. So I traded, and I got Rich Dad's Guide to Investing. That's the book I got.
Okay.
And it all made sense to me somehow. I mean, even without the book one and book two. And yeah, it kind of launched me into wanting to do real estate, which I think I already wanted to do. I mean, my grandpa kind of dabbled in it a little bit. And then crazy enough, my recruiter from the military, mm-hmm. when I got back from my duty, he was still in my hometown. Like he retired from the military in my hometown. And he owned a ton of rental properties. And he was saying, yeah, you should use your GI, you know, you should use your FIAID loan, and you go get a fourplex. You can live in one and rent the other three, and all that stuff made so much sense to me.
Yeah.
And at this point, it just started to culminate because, well, I got laid off, and you know, I needed something to do, and I was already primed for real estate. So
okay,
and
this is what, late 90s
seminar, you know, late 90s, early 2000, somewhere around there, and I went to this guy's seminar. I thought it was actually a job listing, and it was.
Did you really?
I did, dude. Because that was back. I was actually looking in the newspaper. I mean, you think about that. It was probably like the end of the newspaper era. Actually,
right.
In the help wanted section, right? And there it was, man. Millionaire real estate investor. You know, now they write on
signs. Seeks apprentice, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So,
right.
I went there, and there was a bunch of people, and I was kind of pissed at first, and then. Did a really good presentation, man. So I went to his deal, and it was really good training. And that's how I found my first deal. And my first deal worked. Made just under 20 grand
nice.
In just under 30 days. And I never looked back, man. It was great.
So this was a wholesale deal? So you got started wholesaling, not with rental properties?
Yeah, it was a really interesting deal too, because it was, you know, I found this deal that had a ton of equity in it. Well, for me, it was a ton of equity, right? It was really only about $25,000, $26,000, but to me at the time it was a lot of money. And there was only one problem I could find with the house. As you walk in the door and you look up, there was this like water stain right in the entryway.
Okay.
This lady had been trying to sell her house. She had repaired the roof, but she's out of money. And I thought, well, that's great. So I didn't have any money either. So I put an option contract on this deal, and my option consideration was that I would fix that hole or that problem, right?
Yeah, that's great.
I didn't know how to fix it either, so I had to go get my brother. I said, dude, I'll cut you in on the deal. I need you to fix this thing up here because I don't know how to fix it. And as soon as we fixed it, dude, it sold. First people to walk through it bought it.
Wow. That, let me tell you, that's a pretty creative option consideration. Usually people put down money, right? But you were like, hey, as my option consideration, I'll solve this challenge for you. And that's what ended up helping you get the deal done.
I think that's, you know, that's really the name of the game, because yeah. When I got done with the seminar, the guy's seminar said, he said his big pitch was, I'll fund it. You find it, I'll fund it. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I found it. I sent it to him and he didn't fund it. So now I'm screwed. I put the last of the money I had was on my credit card. I put on his I had no money, like none. And I had a young family. And I mean, I had to make this thing work, and I knew it was a deal. So, you know, you get creative and solve the problem.
One of the things I'm hearing, Ron, like kind of listening to your story is, you know, you just mentioned you had a family, you know, you got laid off, or you just, you know, you stopped working as an employee. It sounds like you kind of burned the ships, you know, that analogy that you were committed to this, and you you know, for you, was it just like a mindset that, hey, I'm going to make this thing work come hell or high water, regardless of what happens, I'm just going to kind of keep at it? Or was there some fear associated with, you know, pivoting into real estate full time and starting to do this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if, for whatever reason, I was not scared of real estate at all. Like buying properties and all that kind of stuff and negotiating with people. I'd been in sales and negotiations for years. So none of that stuff really bothered me. What bothered me was not being able to do it. So that was kind of it kind of shoved me into making something happen, because I didn't want to be the guy who, you know, couldn't make this thing work.
Yeah.
I saw other people in that class who'd made it work, and they were not smarter than me, man.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to make it work.
Exactly.
Right? In addition to the fact that I needed it to work. So I wanted it to work in the worst way, but I needed it to work for my family.
Yeah, and
I
don't want to let me relying on you.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I get it, man. I get it. And something else that kind of jumps out at me is, you know, you mentioned that you had been in sales. I think obviously that was a huge reason you were able to, you know, first of all, just not have that limiting belief or that fear that I think holds a lot of people back. And I've always told people, you know, if there's one or two skills that you should really focus on a daily basis and develop, it's sales and marketing. Marketing and sales. If you just had those two skills, and I know that's very general and broad, but if you just focused on that, like, you'll never starve, regardless of what you decide to do. I don't know if you agree with that, but for me, I've always kind of found that to be the case.
Well, I 100% agree. And I mean, you and I know a lot of coaches out there, right?
Yep.
Right. Do real estate coaching. And every one of them I've ever talked to that said that the students that complain, they're the ones who show up and haven't done their work. And what's the work? The work is always prospecting and communicating with humans.
That's right.
You know, both of those things, it's basically marketing and sales, the things that they don't want to do. And the reason they don't want to do it is because, you know, they're scared of it. And they're scared of it because they don't know how to do it. And so I 100% agree. And it doesn't matter what business you're in.
That's right.
You've got to market and you've got to sell.
Yep. Yep. And I think, you know, I'm blown away by just technology, like what we're able to do these days through technology. But I also think it's kind of it's a blessing and a curse to a lot of people, that there's so many people that they want to automate the entire business and they want to just work behind their laptop 24/7. And they want, you know, we're in a people business. Like, real estate is just a product, right? But like you said, you've got to communicate with people. And it's crazy, but the more people I talk to, especially when it comes to marketing, lead generation, lead conversion, like, it's going back to like the old school stuff, like that never fails us, right? But it's just picking up the phone, sending a text message, like, you know, that kind of stuff. If you just have those interpersonal skills and you can communicate well with people, it's never going to fail you. You know, I guess is the last point I want to make.
Well, I think especially today, because so many other people are losing that.
That's right. You know,
back 15, 20 years ago, most people could communicate. I mean, not everybody was great at sales, but people weren't scared to talk to other human beings, right? Mm-hmm. And they weren't trying to get away from talking to people. So if you're a person nowadays who isn't scared to communicate, and especially communicate like we are right now, like, you have a dialogue with somebody.
That's right.
There's a lot of people out there who really want that, especially when they're, you know, when you're trying to negotiate with somebody on their home. I mean, think about that. It's an emotional thing.
That's right.
You know, right. And if you can actually get in there and figure out what their challenge is and help them through this emotional challenge, you have a leg up on all of the hundreds of other people who are mailing postcards and marketing online and everything else, right?
Yeah. And let me tell you, Ron, one of the things that I'll share with people that's kind of a tip that has worked for me, you know, and I've been more intentional about it in the past year or so. This isn't something I've always done, but so many people are just used to communicating by firing off a text message. And obviously that's, you know, text messaging is awesome. I do it all day long. I mean, Ron, you and I have been communicating to line up this podcast through text message. But one of the things that I'll often do, you know, at least a handful of times a week, is I'll record a short video of myself, you know, 30 seconds, a minute long, and I'll text the video to someone. And I'm not even asking for anything. I'm just saying, hey man, I'm thinking about you. Just wanted to see how you're doing. And you can use this with sellers. You can use this with buyers, with anybody. You know, just be genuine about it and just, hey, just wanted to connect with you, find out how you're doing, that kind of thing. And, you know, I've noticed, man, the last year, people are really, they're so receptive to it, because number one, it's something that is just, it's not that common, right? I don't know about you, but I don't get very many people that just you know, communicate with me that way. And just, they send me a video and they're just kind of touching base with me. And I find that if you're genuine with it, people are just much more drawn to you. And I don't know about men. I think you and I are the same in that we're relationship people. It's like, I'm always trying to see how I can, you know, go deep with the right kind of people. And I think if you have that mentality with whether it be sellers, buyers, JV partners, whoever you communicate with, and you just kind of focus on what Gary Vaynerchuk talks about, it's the 51-49, right? You always want to give more to the relationship than you're trying to get. I think if you have that mentality, it's going to serve you well in the long run. But I think the key is, Ron, and I don't know your thoughts, but you got to be genuine about it. You can't do that just because, like, you're trying to be, you know, sly and that you want something from the person.
Yeah, man, people see through that.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. But I thought it was really cool, man, because you sent me one of those when we first started talking about doing this.
Yep.
And it's funny because my text back to you, I just pulled it up because I thought, oh yeah, this is what I said. I said, great to see you this morning.
Yeah, right.
I didn't say, you know, thanks for texting. I said, great to see you this morning because you sent me a video text, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, so. Yeah.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, hey, you touched on, the fact that you had a partnership and then you kind of built up your existing company from the ground up. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, I know we were talking offline and you were saying, you know, I hate to call them failures, but lessons learned is, you know, you had a partnership that, you know, kind of went sideways. And I think it was a blessing in disguise at the time. Although I'm guessing, you know, I heard your presentation back at our last mastermind and it was just kind of, it floored me, man. It was because I could see, you know, I could see what you had when you were kind of talking about it, how painful that experience must have been while you were in it, while you were kind of in the eye of the storm. Not to get into the details, unless, you know, share whatever you want to share, but can you just kind of talk about your experience with that partnership and just how people are able to make partnerships work or just your overall thoughts? Because I see a lot of people, especially people that are getting started in this business, they partner up with others for the wrong reasons. And partnerships are super difficult. I've never really had a partner. So I'd love to hear your journey, you know, with that previous business, and then we can kind of get into your existing business today.
Yeah, man, I think that here's what I've learned. Partnerships fail when communication breaks down. Period. Mm-hmm. You know,
any partnership, by the way, that we're talking
marriage,
we're talking business, marriage,
friendship, business doesn't make any difference.
Yep.
It's always because people quit communicating. And that can be one person. If one person quits communicating, it's over. Doesn't even make any difference if the other one wants to or not. Mm-hmm. In my case, I didn't want the partnership to end. And I really didn't even understand what was going on. I really didn't. Honestly, I think somebody got in the guy's head. You know, there were some reasons for that. I mean, I was the face of the company and, you know, sometimes, you know, I have all of my reasons why I think maybe this happened, but honestly, I asked the guy afterwards and, he didn't have a good reason, you know? But it was, I mean, a business relationship or a business partnership that terminates, breaks up. And if it breaks up and it's not amicable, it's just like divorce. I mean, it is exactly like divorce, except for there's no sex. That's the only difference.
Right.
Right. It's just as ugly. It's nasty. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody. Mm-hmm. So my suggestion to people who have partnerships is, man, you got to be brutally honest with the other person always. And you can't hold things in because at some point, I mean, it's not fair to the other person for you to hold things in. The most important thing you can do in a relationship of any kind is to be honest.
Yeah, transparency.
And to be able to have an open relationship where you can talk without everybody getting their feelings hurt, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So that you can grow together in a partnership. And the ones that I've seen be successful, they have that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it was brutal. The one thing that I'll tell people though, and this is whether it's a partnership or whether you go through some kind of financial challenge or whatever, and you have to rebuild. What I learned from this is that no one can take away what you learn.
Mm-hmm.
You can lose your money. You can lose all your stuff. I mean, you can lose a whole lot of things, but the one thing you don't lose in all of those scenarios is what you know, what you've learned, which allowed me to rebuild. I mean, I rebuilt to the same level that it took me 7 years in 1 year.
That's incredible.
I mean, it is. And because you have the ability and all of the knowledge, in addition to what you said earlier, I mean, your net worth is determined by the people that you associate yourself with. Mm-hmm. Well, most of those people don't go away either. The real relationships that you have, those don't go away.
Yeah.
And so it's easier to rebuild the second time if that, God, I hope that doesn't happen to people. But if it does, yeah, keep your chin up, man. You learned a lot. You've been beat up a lot. Failure can catapult you into terrific success if you let it.
Brother, I don't know one person that I would consider successful that hasn't failed a ton of times. And so sometimes I have a hard time understanding why people fail, but I get it. You know, like nobody wants to fail, but those are just, they're opportunities to learn and grow. And again, that might sound cliche, and it's a lot harder to accept and have that mindset when you're kind of in the eye of the storm and you're going through a you know, something that's just not perceived as positive. But it's an opportunity to learn and grow. And man, to your point, that's why I've always said, you know, the best investment is in yourself. That's why you and I travel multiple times a year, and we go to masterminds and we go to events. And it's not just like, you know, learning, but just, you know, strengthening certain relationships and building your network. I mean, the best investment you can ever make is in yourself. Money, you're going to make it, you're going to lose it. You know, time can be, you can lose time, you can create time if you're intentional, but it's exactly right, man. You could take everything away from you, and you prove that what took you 7 years to build, you did it in 1 year, which again, it's, I mean, that's incredible. And that's you're to be commended for that, because a lot of people, you know, they get kicked in the teeth and they just kind of like, they stop, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we talk about relationships. You were just talking about relationships. As you remember back through challenges that you go through, you never go through those alone, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, probably some of the people who don't get back up is because they don't have a good enough support system around them to help them.
Sure.
But that was one of the key things for me. Because when I was going through that partnership dissolution, you know, you have to keep your emotions out of it. And it's a really emotional deal.
And that's difficult to do. Like
it's nearly impossible unless you have some rational people around you, you know, because there's a lot of people in the world who, and they have this scorched earth mentality, right? Where you know, somebody does something to you, you got to do it 10 times worse to them, and you just annihilate them, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with that, man.
That's a shitty way to live, I think.
Yeah, it really is. And I guess, does it work? Well, yeah. I mean, I could point to a whole bunch of, you know, really successful people who do that, right? But is that how I want to live? No. And I think ultimately, you're better off, and you can still be successful not having to do that to people. Yeah. So if you surround yourself with the right relationships that can actually help you through that time, it's really critical. And I had that, right? Thank God I had already kind of put those relationships in place where I could ask advice of people,
yeah,
who would give me sound advice, right?
Yeah.
It's really important.
And I think, you know, to your point, Ron, something else I kind of want to throw in there is don't be like, you know, if you're listening to this, we all have challenges. Like, you know, Ron and I were talking offline, and nobody has everything figured out despite what they might say, you know? So don't be afraid to ask. I think fortunately, that's one of the things that has really benefited me is that, like, you know, I have challenges, just, you know, probably more challenges than a lot of people. And I'm not shy to tell people about that. And so, like, you know, Ron, you and I are going to talk in a while, and I'm going to pick your brain on something, because you've been down that road, and I'm not there yet. So if you don't ask, you can't, you know, when you connect with people in your network, they have a lot of experience, they have a lot of knowledge. Hopefully you're connecting with the right people. But if you don't ask, then how are you ever going to get the benefit of their experience, their knowledge, their wisdom? And I think that's something that people struggle with, is like, well, how are they going to look at me, or how are they going to perceive me if I ask this, or if I reveal, or I'm transparent about this that I might have going on in my life? And I understand why people are reluctant to kind of reveal certain things. But at the same time, if you don't, if you're not vulnerable with people, then I don't know. It's kind of like I'm having a hard time putting it into words, but hopefully what I'm trying to explain is it's, you have that person there that they want to help you, but you got to be vulnerable and transparent with what you have going on so that you can benefit from their wisdom and their experience.
Well, and I the other thing is that, I mean, we're in a group of some of the top A player guys in real estate, right? And I mean, every one of them comes with challenges.
That's right.
Every one of them. None of us there are without challenge. And you have to find I think that you do have to be vulnerable, but you got to find the right venue for it.
Sure.
You know, because, you know, I'm probably not going to, you know, out all of my problems to people who I don't think can help me. Mm-hmm. But man, I need to surround myself with people who I do feel comfortable sharing the challenges that I have so that I can grow.
Yeah.
Because you can't grow if you, and that's a prideful thing to do anyway, right? I mean, right. That's really what we're talking about is if you're so prideful that you can't help other, or if you can't ask other people for help, you're not going to grow. Mm-hmm. You're necessarily going to stall, yeah. Right? You're going to go backwards.
Yeah, you're going to tread water.
It's really important. And it's one of the things that helped me grow even faster was when I actually found a place where I could do that as a business owner, where people could actually understand what I was talking about.
Right.
Like, I have this problem. Because if, you know, in case in point, if you go, if you go hang out with one of your buddies that's not necessarily a business owner, and you start talking to about all of your problems that you have as a business owner,
they can't relate.
He can't relate. B, if he doesn't make as much money as you, he's probably going to think you're just a show off jerk. I mean, there's any number of things they could think. That's the wrong venue, right? Right.
I agree.
But if you go to a place where a bunch of other business owners are, they all are just going to nod their head and go, yeah, I've had that problem. And if they haven't had it yet, they're going to have it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a great collective energy that comes from having a source like that where you can go and bang ideas around.
Yeah, no, I love it, man. I completely agree with you. So after that partnership, you know, again, you built your existing business from the ground up. What is your business and your team look like today? Because I know not too long ago you moved from Utah, and you're operating the business remotely now. What does the team look like today? What does the business primarily do? And just kind of give us an overview of what that looks like.
So my company sells primarily 1 to 4 unit rental properties all across the country in different markets to our clients. And
a turnkey provider?
Yeah, yeah. And so I've been doing that since 2005. So before it was cool, and we rode the market up and down and now back up again. And you know, we've sold thousands of properties. So we've been doing this quite a while. But my team is relatively small. So we do it with a pretty small team. There's only 12 of us. Most everybody is in Utah, but about half my team in Utah works remote as well from home.
Okay.
You know, we've had really good luck hiring stay-at-home moms, people who need flexible schedules, like college students, people like that who have talent, but they kind of get shoved out of the workforce because
their situation. You know,
they need some flexibility, either location flexibility or time flexibility.
Right.
And we've been able to incorporate that in our business, and because of that, we've been able to pluck some real cherry people, and put them on our team, and they fit in the team really, really well. So. I wouldn't be scared of remote. I moved, moved my family to the beach out here in Charleston. Uh-huh. And, I did that for multitude of reasons, but it was on my vision. So,
I love it.
We just sped up the vision, you know, because we could. And then I have a president, I have a COO. I'm a sales manager and, mm-hmm. And a bunch of people that fall underneath that. And they, for the most part, run things. So I was gone for 3 weeks, almost a month. And you know, they did a great job. I mean, I can go on vacation and I don't have to worry about whether or not things are going to be there when I get back. It's fantastic. Yeah. There are fantastic people on our team.
So, man, I think it would really benefit people listening to, you know, kind of hear your thoughts on, because it sounds like, you know, part of the reason your business is so successful, number one, you were intentional in the way that you set it up that way, but you obviously have talented people on your team. You know, it sounds like you have the right people in the right seats to kind of steal, you know, Jim Collins, what he talked about in the book, Good to Great. Can you talk about, you know, where you're, how to attract and find the right people? Because I think hiring, it's something that can kind of make or break your business. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. It's something I've struggled with in the past. Matter of fact, I have somebody, you know, that's leaving a key part of my leadership team in the next 30 days. And I'm going to be looking to fill that person or that seat with the right person. Talk a little bit about, you know, just your hiring process, where you find people because I think people could really benefit from your experience there.
Yeah. I mean, I struggled with that too. So before everybody thinks that, you know, Ron just, you know, fell into this space where he's just great at hiring people. I'm not actually, I'm really bad at it. So I'll just air that right out of the gate.
Okay.
What changed for me, I honestly think I lucked into, or I mean, luck is a bad word. I was blessed to find the current president of my company. I almost didn't hire her. And there's a whole story there. But I mean, she started at my front desk. She wanted to learn real estate and she wanted to start with a growing company and grow with it, which I thought was nonsense when I first interviewed her because mm-hmm. of her past and her resume. And here was a person who had, you know, run Abercrombie and Fitch for the Southwest division and, you know, graduated college when she was 17. And I mean, if you looked at her resume, you're like, why in the world are you applying for this front desk position that I had? Right.
Right.
But I took a chance and it was one of the smartest things I ever did in spite of the fact that it wasn't very smart. It was just, I rolled the dice. Mm-hmm. She's turned out to be invaluable, and a great friend. So I didn't do anything miraculous there. That happened. I think when we started hiring people and not having challenges, and I say we because she and I had challenges for quite a number of years hiring people, is when we actually got really, really clear on our company's purpose and our company's core values.
I love that you went there.
That was the turning point for us hiring really good people.
Yeah.
Because almost everything you can train except for those. If they're not aligned with your purpose and their core values are off, you can hire the perfect person. That's what I get so frustrated about. We would hire the person who on paper and in the interviews was perfect for this position. I mean, perfect. They could pass all the tests. You could give them every test you could think of, right? And then they come in and it didn't work. And it overnight, once we had alignment in our core values and our purpose, and we eliminated the people who didn't fit and we replaced them with people who fit, we had a team.
Yep.
When you have a team that's all driving the same direction and they have the same core values, it is so much easier because, man, everybody fits, right? So if there's a hole, everybody's going to, it's a team. And what do you do on a team, man? If you have a basketball team, I can't stand basketball, but let's say you have a basketball team, right?
All right.
And you're missing a big portion of the team. Everybody just, you know, if somebody gets hurt, like in hockey, I actually like hockey, so let's talk about that. In hockey, if one of your forwards gets hurt and you've got a secondary guy that comes in who's not as good as the other dude, everybody rallies.
Yeah.
Right? The team has to help.
Next man up mentality, right?
Yeah. So that's what you do when you're a team. If there's a challenge, then everybody doesn't point the finger at everybody else. Everybody just jumps together as a team and solves the problem.
Yeah.
And that comes from the alignment. It doesn't come from any technical skill or any ability that people have. The abilities and the technical skills, that stuff can be trained. Core values cannot be trained.
Well, Ron, I don't know if you remember this couple, when was it, a month and a half, 2 months ago, whenever it was that we were together at dinner, we were having a conversation with a few other, you know, a few other investors and entrepreneurs. And we were talking about this very thing is that, and you got to be intentional about it. Like the culture that you have in your business, establishing and going through a process of creating your core values, that isn't just stuff that you like slap on paper and say, okay, these are our core values. I mean, you got to go through a process to really like vet that out, you know, who you guys are, why you operate. And then, as you know, Ron, you know, going through, you know, the traction and the EOS processes, you know, from that point forward, like all hiring decisions, firing decisions, how you reward and compensate people. I mean, that's all pulled out of your core values and your purpose. You know, it's really, really powerful.
Well, and we've even taken it a step further. It's all of our JV partners. It's all of our clients. It's, I mean, clients don't get to call in to our office and not disrespect people in my office on my team.
Yeah.
I'll fire a client in a heartbeat that does that, because it doesn't align with my core values. I'm not going to have partner organizations that we work with that don't align with our core values, whether they're lenders or title companies. I don't care who they are, because eventually that's going to blow up in your face and you don't ever know when it's going to happen. But I promise you, take it from me. I've learned from experience. People who do not align with your core values eventually will cost you money. They will cost you time, and it will affect the culture and the glue that holds your team together.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I got nothing else to add. We're kind of winding it up here, Ron. One of the things I definitely want to touch on before we wrap up is the wealth building component. You know, there's a lot of wholesalers that listen to the show. And wholesaling, I think, is a great business. It's a cash machine, the way that I look at it. But I think there's a lot of people, myself included, you know, you get caught in that wheel of just deal to deal, generating revenue, creating cash. But a lot of people just kind of neglect the wealth building component of that. And I know you've been involved in, you know, multifamily deals. You know, you got a rental portfolio. Can you just kind of talk to us about, not necessarily a specific asset class, but just general principles as far as wealth building and how you were intentional about, you know, building cash flow throughout your career?
Yeah, in large part, cash flow is the reason why I was able to speed up my vision. Early on, I just noticed that people who had assets that produced cash flow had a lot more time and a lot less stress.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy to see. If you actually look around at the wealthy people that you know, anybody listening to this, they have assets of some sort to produce cash flow for them. Because it eliminates or at least mitigates stress.
Yeah.
And it gives you a whole bunch of options. And so, one of the biggest mistakes I made, Alex asked me about that earlier. I mean, one of the biggest mistakes I made was when I was early in my career and I was rehabbing and flipping houses and wholesaling and you know, I get that, I call it real estate crack, because it's a quick hit, you know, it's addictive. And you want more and more and more of that. And we would put more of our cash into the business so that we could get more and more crack. And unfortunately, I didn't buy any assets. All the assets that I had were, you know, were I was flipping, right? So they really weren't assets. It was inventory. Mm-hmm. I didn't take any of my cash and I didn't put it into cash flow assets. So in the first piece of my business where I was investing in an area where you could only sell houses through HUD loans and HUD changed their guidelines, I was out of business. And I had to start over again, you know? And it wouldn't have been that big of a deal if I had actually bought some cash flowing real estate, but it was a big deal because I didn't have any income coming in. I had I don't know how many houses I had. They were all, I needed to sell them and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the next time all this stuff happened, well, I did it smarter, right? I took some of my income and I bought cash flowing assets, which I encourage everybody. That's the whole reason for my business exists. I believe everyone should have them. Saw a great post the other day and it was just a scale, right? And it was, if you have $100 a month coming in, that equates to you know, $24,000 sitting in the bank earning 5% interest.
Huh.
I mean, think about it just for a second. That's powerful.
Yeah.
If you have $1,000 a month coming in, right? That's $250,000 sitting in the bank. It's equivalent of $250,000 sitting in the bank somewhere. Wow. earning you 5% interest, which you can't do in a bank, right? But yeah, let's just say you could.
That is really powerful. It puts it in perspective.
Doesn't it? I mean, people sometimes are like, wow, I mean, $100 is not going to change my life. That's right. That's right. But you know, if you buy 10 houses and they're cash flowing $300 a month, that can change your life. I mean, it might not buy you the, you know, the car that you want.
Yeah.
But that eliminates stress. And if something happens in your life and you've got $5,000 to $10,000 of passive income coming in, you can change your life and you can structure it to where you can live within $5,000 to $10,000 and buy yourself time, right? If you've got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month coming in, it doesn't matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, Rob, when you initially started building and started buying cash flow producing assets, specifically single family, were you paying all cash? Were you leveraging debt? I mean, how were you financing these properties?
Yeah, I leverage right now, which I know some people. I mean, and I don't think real estate's one size fits all. So if you've got the cash to pay cash, do it. I leverage right now, and the reason I do is because the debt is cheap. I mean, it's basically free. It's below inflation. So they're paying me to use the money, in my opinion. And that said, if you can get it, that's only if you can get it on a fixed term for a number of years and you can amortize it right. And, you know, if you do all of that, I agree with Warren Buffett. It's a way in effect to short the dollar. It's, it's amazing right now.
Right.
Now, when financing gets crazy again, at some point, whenever that happens, you know, well, that changes the story.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said at some point in your life about having paid off real estate, the cash flows. And I'm a proponent of that too, if you've got the money.
Yeah.
I think there's a wealth building phase where I believe that it for a lot of people that don't have the ability to generate the same amount of income that maybe you and I do, Alex, that need to leverage for a while. And take advantage of the market, but they should never over leverage, and they should also always, you know, look at the worst case scenario when you're buying assets. Right. Last thing you want to do is end up with a negative cash flowing asset, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's so interesting that you said that, Ron. I will wrap it up with this last point here. Is I was having a conversation with a couple of guys that have a pretty large rental portfolio, large by my standards. You know, talking anywhere between 80 and 130. You know, free and clear rentals. And we were talking about where they see the market going in the next 12 to 24 months. And one of the guys that you and I both know said, Alex, I gotta be honest, I don't give a shit what happens to the market because I got all this cash flow coming in and it just doesn't matter. And it hit me between the eyes. What he was really saying is, it's like a safety net for him that regardless of what the market does, regardless of what happens to his actual business, he's got all these assets that spit off cash flow for him. There's always going to be a need for housing. And I was like, well, that's got to give you like he must sleep like a baby, just knowing that regardless of what the market does, regardless of, you know, if he screws up his business, he's got these assets. Now I'm simplifying it, but I think you know what I mean.
And well, I think a lot of people out there, they hear that and they go, yeah, but what if 2008 happens again? And people just are fundamentally do not understand the difference between cash flow and the value of the real estate. Your house, your rental house, does not get its feelings hurt because it loses value. And so long as you don't have to liquidate it because you over leveraged it or because the rest of your life blew up because you managed your money in a piss poor fashion.
Yeah.
You're just like that guy because everybody who had rental property in 2008 that wasn't negatively cash flowing and hadn't over leveraged themselves saw rents increase, their cash flow go up, and life as they knew it, fine. Even if their rental portfolio got cut in half as far as value goes because their cash flow went up, which is the name of the game.
That's right.
And it frustrates me to no end that people conflate the two. It's not the same thing. Cash flow is not equal to the value of your property.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, brother, man, on that note, I appreciate the time, man. This has been awesome to connect with you, have you on the podcast. I got one more question I want to wrap up with here. Rewind the clock 15, 20 years. You know, I don't know how old you are, but you're a young dude. What's the one piece of advice? This could be related to business. It could be related to life, relationships, whatever it might be. But if you had to, you know, tell the younger Ron Phillips just one piece of advice, knowing what you know now, what would that be?
It would be to make a vision for your life and force the rest of your world, including your business, to work within your vision.
Perfect.
That's what I would, that's what I would tell me.
That's awesome. Love it, man. Well, hey, dude, where can people connect with you? You know, find out more about you, your business, what you have going on. Just reach out.
Yeah. I mean, you can find us on our website is RPC Invest. It stands for RP Capital Invest, RPCinvest.com. And, our number is 801-990-5109. I mean, if you're an old fashioned guy like me, you actually want to talk to a human being, you can call us at 801-990-5109. I'm sorry, I don't have a text for you guys that don't want to talk to a human, but here's an email. You can go to invest@rpcinvest.com.
There you go. Hey, man, you might have a bunch of people like sending you video messages probably. So
I love it. I love, man, that was one of my favorite messages ever, dude. So if people want to send us a video, just, you know, I guess if they do, they can email me and say, hey,
yeah, they can email you the video,
text and we'll make it happen for them.
That's cool, man. Hey, buddy, I really appreciate the time. Thanks for, you know, for sharing everything you did. And I know we'll be in contact and we'll see each other soon. So guys, just take one thing that Ron shared today and implement it in your business. Don't get overwhelmed. We covered a lot of different topics, but hopefully there's something that jumped out, resonates with you and kind of hits you between the eyes and move it forward. Because if you don't, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast, but if you don't do anything with it, it kind of defeats the purpose. So just want to encourage you to just take one thing that Ron mentioned, apply it to your life, apply it to your business. And I think in time you'll see the fruits from that. So I'll catch you guys in the next show.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text Empire to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.